Good morning. My name is Shelley, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. It's good to see so many faces out there. It's awesome. I have the pleasure of introducing our three panel speakers. And the first speaker is Phyllis G. And I have the privilege of knowing this lady quite well. In fact, she's my sponsor, and she's very important to me, and she lives the program, and I've learned so much from her. So I would like to introduce Phyllis to come and share with us.
Thank you, Shelley, for those kind words. Can you hear me back there? Yes? Okay. Good morning. My name is Phyllis, and I'm a grateful member of the Al-Anon Alateen family groups. What a powerful journey this has been. I just love this journey to serenity, and I've heard such good stuff in our speakers and our workshops, and just so grateful to be here. I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I'm so grateful for the Al-Anon adult children's component within our Al-Anon Alateen family groups. And the topic of the festival is one of my favorite tools, and I'm honored to share some of my experience, strength, and hope on the topic of awareness, acceptance, and action. Over the years, the three A's of Al-Anon, awareness, acceptance, and action, that's a tongue twister, have become my blueprint for growth and progress in my healing journey. For me, my childhood process of awareness, acceptance, and action growing up in that alcoholic home was to go straight into action. I did not like conflict. I did not like tension. I wanted everything to be okay, and I wanted it to be okay as soon as possible. So I became a fixer, a controller, an arbitrator, a diplomat, and a peacemaker. Perhaps I had a subconscious awareness and, that was my role at that time, and perhaps my acceptance was, to always be expecting chaos as to be a part of my life. But action was where I focused. My action quite often consisted of walking on eggshells, assessing the climate within my childhood home, trying to predict the next crisis, and trying to caretake whomever was creating the chaos, the crisis, or those climate changes within my family. I carried this process or this method of awareness, acceptance, and action into my adult life, into my alcoholic marriage, and into raising my children in that alcoholic home. By always acting, I robbed myself of a lot of awareness. You know, I didn't realize the sky was blue, the grass was green, and that there was everything in between until I got to the program. And I guess, that process of always skipping awareness and acceptance and always flying into action is what got me into trouble. I was a very busy lady, jumping from one crisis to another, thinking that I could solve everything and everyone's dilemmas by taking appropriate action and creating further chaos. The failure of my actions and the further creation of chaos is eventually what got me to the rooms of Al-Anon. My action process was no longer working. I was broken. I was in pain. I had no self-esteem left, and I didn't want to live. In recollection, I would say that my first experience with awareness was the gentleness of the Al-Anon program, along with a huge awareness that I was not alone. I always thought what was going on in my house was totally unique. And the equally huge awareness that there was hope for me. The acceptance of those awarenesses was a process that developed through hearing parts of my story being shared by you people. By being accepted for my inability to share when I first came and from learning about who I was and what I felt, I began to trust and accept the reality of those awarenesses. You know, we read and we've heard this weekend already several times about growing up in that alcoholic home and how we learned not to talk don't talk, don't trust, don't feel. The action that followed those awarenesses and acceptance now seems like a logical application of going to lots of meetings, reading lots of Al-Anon literature, talking to Al-Anon members, eventually finding a sponsor, and truly embracing the action of the program. It is important for me to work the three A's in order instead of always flying into action. Awareness of what is going on within me is the first step to being able to accept my part. You know, I've been around a long time, long enough to be able to turn step one inside out, upside down. And, you know, when my life becomes unmanageable, I look at what I'm trying to have power over. Very often that provides me with the awareness, and I need to accept my part before I can take any appropriate action. I find it comforting not to have to go into action until last. It reminds me that when I know not what to do nothing. If I am patient, pray for my higher power's will for me, examine methods of possible actions, and examine my motives for any possible actions, the required action quite often unfolds. When I say that I examine my motives for action, for any possible action, I can usually gauge my level of acceptance. For example, if my action is to kill someone, then I know that I need to spend more time in either awareness or acceptance. I am currently using the three A's to process a painful struggle within my family. In order to become aware, I have done step one, two, and three on the family members that are making my life unmanageable. I wrote, I prayed, I shared my struggles at meetings, and I talked about it with my sponsor and my trusted Al-Anon friends. I wrote about all the anxiety, the sleepless nights, the effects the struggle is having on my physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being. I give myself permission to feel my feelings. I've cried. I've sobbed. I've tried not to deny or stuff what is going on. I have prayed for clarity in determining awareness through the process of learning from my struggle. I am receiving little awarenesses through the process of learning from my struggle. I am learning of my family that my family situation is exactly as it's supposed to be, of a particular family member being toxic for me right now, and of God having a plan for that those family members and for myself, and that it is a plan that far exceeds any plan I could possibly fathom for them or for myself. I am learning that I need to look after myself and not accept unacceptable behavior, that I need to set boundaries and to stop letting those family members own my power. I am learning to be gentle and kind with myself and those family members. Acceptance is still part of my current struggle. I pray for letting go of the pain and for restoration to some form of peace and serenity. I read my Al-Anon literature, and I try to embrace patience. I incorporate the serenity prayer, asking for serenity while I accept the things I cannot change. I pray to be able to transfer the awareness from my head into my heart and to truly be able to accept that I will be okay. Again, I go back and forth between acceptance and awareness, or awareness and acceptance, whichever way I do it. I acknowledge that I need to process that awareness and acceptance, and that taking no action is action in action for me right now. Make sense? Believe me, I do not do it perfectly. As a matter of fact, my heart smiled when I realized that my three C's are six C's. Awareness, anxiety. Acceptance, anxiety. Action, anxiety. That's a lot of ahs. When I substitute humanness for anxiety, my three C's are still six C's. awareness, humanness, awareness, acceptance, awareness, action. And that becomes a lot of ahas. I have been afforded a lot of peace and serenity in my journey through recovery, and it is my goal to return to that place of peace and serenity with the help of awareness, acceptance, and action in my current struggle and in any future unmanageability within my life. And I know there's going to be other struggles and unmanageability. I am so grateful to be here and to be a member of this fellowship. Thank you for allowing me to share, and thank you for listening.
Thank you, Phyllis. That was awesome. Now you know why I like her so much. She's a real inspiration to me. Our next speaker is Jen A. And so, Jen, I will call you up to share.
Wow. Good morning. My name is Jennifer, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm also married to the short blonde-haired guy in the room. Sorry, honey. Actually, when I meet new people in the program and they tell me that they've been to an adult child meeting, I always ask, "Did you meet my husband Ryan?" And they kind of look at me and I say, "You know, the short guy, blonde hair, you can't miss him." And they go, "Oh yeah, I met him, totally." I think I have to practice that anonymity a little bit better. I'm sorry. Just keep coming back. I'm really thankful to be here and to be able to share my story with you. Many of you have heard my husband's version of how it went down, and now it's my turn. So just keep coming back. My home group is the ladies' group on Tuesday afternoon at the convalescent home on 31st and Idlewild. We meet at 1:30, and we are one of only two ladies' Alcoholic Anonymous groups in the city. My sobriety date is March 22, 2014. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and her condition for sponsoring me was that I attend two meetings a week. I meet her once per week, face-to-face, have over coffee. And I maintain a service position in the program and in my home group. And I do just that. I'm the intergroup rep for my home group, and I'm the treasurer of the Saskatoon AA Intergroup Roundup Committee. And I attend two meetings per week. I actually am a really great candidate for the Al-Anon Adult Child Program. And my sponsor tells me that I will show up here once I'm, you know, further along in my work, in my program of AA. But she says there's still lots of work to do. I'm a great candidate because I come from a long line of alcoholics. My mother's parents are both recovering alcoholics and are actually longtime members of this program. They have been sober for each over 30 years, and they have been a great inspiration to my husband and I. If either of us wants to make the other person jealous, all we have to do is send a photo, selfie, in front of my grandma's fireplace with a cup of coffee, and the other one is usually pretty bitter about that. And usually there's a punishment that ensues. It goes something like, well, you know, you got an hour of serenity at Granny's today, so you get to take the kids to dance tonight. Lucky you. My father's father died an alcoholic. He had a stroke relating to many years of drinking and smoking. When he was placed in a care home, he would beg my grandma to bring him beer. And the nursing home actually allowed him to have one beer per day. Looking back, it's so sad. And my grandma, bless her heart, she's still alive today. She's 92 years old, and she's just the sweetest woman you'll ever meet. And she would give the shirt off her back to anybody. Good Catholic woman and just God-fearing and prays every day. She's such a sweet lady. I'm forever grateful to have her in my life. But again, a constant reminder of what this disease does to a family. She doesn't drink, but she has the alcoholic problem. She also has two sons, one of which died from a drug overdose when I was very young. and one of which is my father. My father, I believe, is an active alcoholic. He's functioning, but sometimes barely. My mother, although not a drinker anymore, really, I believe is a dry drunk. She has the untreated disease of alcoholism. Growing up in our house was crazy. Late night fighting, a few times of, you know, threatening divorce. She'd round me up in the car and we'd go look at houses together, you know, places to rent. It's very fabulous. One time they were fighting so bad that my dad had my mom in a chokehold and she was trying to go for a suitcase because she was going to leave him. And I was about 6 years old and I remember her begging me to dial 911. It was just absolute chaos in our family. But then they decided to stay together, to have another baby, and we went to Disneyland. It was magical. You know, happy family. There wasn't a lot of love for my dad. I really barely had a relationship with him growing up. He worked a lot. Like, he'd work from 2 in the afternoon till 9:30 at night, and I was always in bed by the time he got home. My mom, I really do feel like she did her best. She was a very young mom when she had me at 15 years old. She basically left home right when my grandparents were sobering up. So she was also raised in a very chaotic home. And I believe that she did do her best for me. Looking back, I can see all the chaos. I can now understand that we were a family deeply affected by alcoholism. But what I can tell you is, as a young person, before I came into the program and before I really understood what alcoholism was, I never would have believed that our family was affected by alcoholism. I rarely saw my dad drink. I know there was drinking. There's pictures of it, you know, cabin parties and things like that. But there was never the fighting like, you know, dad blew the money, mortgage money on at the bar, or, you know, where's dad? Oh, he's at the bar getting drunk again. It was never like that. I never, ever would have thought that my dad was an alcoholic while growing up. Our chaos was really the living disease at that point. And you darn well know when you have two children of alcoholics married to one another, there will be extreme chaos. So here we have it. Hello, husband Ryan. He's my perfect match. God has a great sense of humor in that two children of alcoholic homes led to us getting together and extreme chaos as well. So now I get to my story. As a child, I was very shy, low self-confidence, unpopular, terrible in school, and really feeling out of place in most circumstances in my life. Like many alcoholics, I too remember having that first drink. It was when I was in grade 7. And yes, that feeling of just a little bit more confident, a little bit funnier, and a little bit sillier made me feel really good about myself. Early to dabble in promiscuity, alcohol caused a lot of trouble in my life from the very beginning. I was either cheating on boyfriends, causing arguments with my friends, or running away from a party just to create drama and make people worry about me. I continued on that way for many years, and of course, as we know, this disease is progressive, and it did get worse. Drugs are a part of my story. I won't delve into that too much today. What it used to be like? Well, looking back, I can see that my lack of higher power put me in a lot of unsafe situations. I put my higher power in friends, boyfriends, my parents, people that employed me. I really just didn't have any guidance, and I really relied on people in my life to guide me. And I expected these people to never fail me. I expected them to lead me, to help me, and to fix me. And when they fell short, as surely as they should, they are human after all, my world crumbled. When these people failed me, I began to feel things like, what if I'm not good enough? What if I'm not worthy of being loved? I was really looking for love in all the wrong places. I tried to be very good at twisting and manipulating people to be what I wanted and needed them to be. If they didn't listen to me, then I would get upset and again think, well, this isn't the friend for me, or this isn't the boyfriend for me, and I would judge them on their shortcomings. After they left, I'd feel alone and want them back, and this became a really vicious circle in my life. Near the end of my drinking, I became an every second day kind of drinker. And the only reason I didn't drink on that second day was because I was so hungover and depressed. And I would wake up and just want to hide from the world. I'd try my best to sleep in as late as I could. And then after the kids were gone and my husband was out the door for work, I'd many times go back to bed and just kind of self-medicate through, you know, getting into a TV show or what have you. I didn't feel confident enough to answer my phone. I'd try to respond to people by text or email. I was just really in a depressive state on those days. And then by the next day, I'd feel great again, and I was back to the races. So at the end of my drinking, I would drive my kids to their extracurricular with wine in my coffee to-go mug. I had to have a drink to attend school functions, and although deep down I knew that these things were terribly wrong, I was desperate to prove that I could function as a normal person. And I realize now that alcohol helped me survive, and that my character defects that were coming through were my only survival skills at that time. It was the only blueprint I knew to make it through life. So what happened then was, this is my second time in AA. I went the first time to quit partying and doing drugs. I stayed sober for about a year and a half, and part of that was due to being pregnant with my youngest child. And when he was 6 months old, I convinced my husband that I'd like to give drinking a try again. And I promised him profusely that I would not go back to my old partying ways, that I just really wanted to drink socially. So I did, and he became heavy into Al-Anon, and we continued on like that for about 2 years. It was very clear in the first year that things weren't working out. We separated once. All the progress we had made while I wasn't drinking and the happiness that we had in our home, it really left quite quickly. And after that first year, my husband tells me he was seriously considering leaving me at that point. But we had a tragic accident in our family where my 16-year-old brother died on our family farm. It was a devastating blow to our already dysfunctional family. My brother Wyatt, he was a very special member of our family. This kid had the kind of old soul that you very rarely get to meet in your lifetime. Children flocked to him. He was popular, kind, smart, and generous. I seriously don't know how he came from our family. But I know today he was a gift, and we were so very lucky to have him. He made so much impact in his short 16 years of his life, more than a lot of adults can say that they've accomplished. And one of his favorite hashtags was make it count. And so that's what I live by today. I know my brother better now than I did when he was alive. And only through looking back at his Facebook and his Twitter pages and the people that came forward at his funeral to share with us what a wonderful person he was. And I can take a lot of solace in that, in knowing what a great person he was. Anyways, after he passed away, almost a year to the day, my drinking got increasingly worse. My husband had hung on because of the death of my brother. But almost a year to the day, things at home were bursting at the seams. My husband moved out, and quite honestly, for about a week or so, I was almost relieved. I really thought that that's what I wanted. My thinking was so selfish that I actually looked forward to having a 3 to 4 day reprieve of my family responsibilities and just to be able to do what I wanted. I'd be able to drink how I wanted. I'd be able to go out how I wanted. I'd be able to, you know, live this what I thought would be this kind of frivolous life. But what happened was I started to feel very lonely very quickly. I started asking Ryan to come back home, and he wouldn't, which was shocking. I kept thinking, but all those times he did, and trying to convince him that we'd be okay just for him to come back home. But Al-Anon had given him the strength he needed to stand up for himself. And I believed him when he said it was over, because this is usually how my relationships would go. I get left, and I continue with the insanity of my life, doing the same things over and over again and expecting different results. It started to occur to me that just maybe I did need help, and just maybe I could have the life I always wanted, a husband, two children, living happily together forever and ever. And I started to think that maybe alcohol did have something to do with our problems. We had already tried everything else, marital counseling, personal counseling, and everything else under the sun we could to think of. Nothing else had worked, so maybe, just maybe, it was the alcohol. The first weekend that Ryan took the kids from me, well, that was my last drunk. I went out, and I went out to drink away my pain. And after being clean from drugs for almost 3 years, I ended up doing drugs that night. And when I woke up in the morning, I remember feeling the desperation, the pain of my actions, and I knew in my heart where my life would head. I knew enough about my addiction and my past experience with drugs and alcohol to know exactly how bad it could get. I could foresee my kids getting taken away from me. My financial security would surely be affected because, you know, drugs are expensive. And I knew from personal experience that the safety of me and my family was surely going to be put at risk in that lifestyle, and the sacrifice to continue down that road was too great for me. I made a decision that day to go back to AA. Upon entering back into these rooms, I was immediately assured that I'd never have to drink again if I didn't want to. It was suggested that I go to as many meetings as I could, that I live this way only one day at a time, that I read the big book and I find a sponsor. And that's what I did, and I haven't had a drink since. One of the promises reads, "We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it." This promise is especially important to me. I am so glad I remember that last drunk and how bad it was. I'm so glad I can still feel the despair I felt that morning when I woke up. No alcoholic has come into these rooms because their drinking was going so well for them. They came in because they had hit their bottom. And I'm glad I hit my bottom when I did. And this is why I love newcomer meetings. It brings me back to how bad things were and why I never want to go back there, to relive the past briefly in a safe place, such as with a sponsor or in a meeting. This is a gift. The gift is in what it does for me today. What it does for me today is it propels me into gratitude for the life I have now. I never knew it could be this good, and the promises do come true. Today I can recognize the small and big blessings in my life and actually genuinely feel happy. Today I've been taught how to be a woman with dignity and respect. Today I can see that my life has purpose. I'm a useful member of society, and I am a child of God. My higher power loves me and has a very important plan for me. Today I can accept when things don't go my way exactly, and I refer back to it's God's plan. You are just but a useful piece of his puzzle, and my place in it will be revealed if I allow him to guide me. Today I understand I am not perfect, and I allow myself to be imperfect because I understand perfection is not possible. And I know that in each instance where my character defects and shortcomings become prevalent, that is my opportunity to show up and do the right thing, and with that I'll grow and become closer to the person I'm meant to be. Today I believe with all my heart that God will provide for me. He will never leave me homeless without the necessities of life, and that I'll have my basic needs met. Being genuine and sincere was not always something that came naturally to me, but today I have learned to invite God into my relationships and ask him to show me how I'm supposed to love this person or show this person love. And it's just made my relationships with people so wonderful. And today I will not have a drink to cope with life. I do not crave it or wish for the days of my past to be my current reality. I have a very genuine gratitude for this program. My husband and I are able to mend our relationship, and together we are working towards breaking the cycle of alcoholism in our family. Very often we will find ourselves referring back to the slogans and traditions in these programs to help us solve our living problems. These are the gifts of this program, and I am so very grateful for this opportunity to share my story. Thank you.
Thanks, Jen, for that. It was very powerful, and I appreciate your courage and honesty. Our next speaker is Laura. I'm sorry, Laura, I don't remember your last initial, but welcome, and share your story.
Thank you. Hello. Hello? Is that okay? It's really hard to tell up here. I've never gotten up and talked before, so I'm pretty nervous, so just kind of bear with me as I try to find my way through this. My name's Laura. I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon. Hello. So to start with, basically, I came to Al-Anon in a nutshell to prove that I was right and that my husband's, everything was his fault and I was right. So that's really what brought me to the doors. My husband's an alcoholic, and our marriage was really just crumbling. And it had been suggested to me many times by counselors that maybe I should try going to Al-Anon, but it just never made it anywhere in there. But this one time, a counselor suggested it in front of my husband. So I thought, shit, now I gotta go so that I can show that I did everything I was supposed to do. So, you know, if this all ended, it wasn't my fault because I did everything. And that's why I went to Al-Anon. So I'd seen kind of the commercials and things. I was fairly certain I wasn't going to get the answers of how to fix the alcoholic. I didn't really even let myself think about it much past that I just had to go to say that I went. And I randomly picked a meeting, the adult child meeting on Thursday nights, and I didn't know what that meant, but I made myself go. And right when I got there, I could feel it getting really nervous, that heat coming up in my face. I knew there was going to be emotions, and I was really worried about that. And but I went in and had a very, very strong experience, I guess is the way I can describe it. I was desperately trying to hide my emotions and doing a terrible job of it. I'm pretty sure it just looked like I was leaking the entire time. And I was terrified. I was really, really scared of the vulnerability and the sharing that was going on. I was terrified that somebody was going to talk to me after the meeting. I basically bolted out of the room. I didn't want to stay there. I couldn't. I was in that state where if somebody even just looked at you or asked your name or said hello, it was just going to explode out, and I couldn't handle that, so I left as fast as I could. But my life, like people say, you know, you don't go into the meeting on a winning note. I was pretty low, and my life was really in a lot of chaos and dysfunction, and I couldn't understand it. I was really angry about it. I was frustrated. I was confused. I think of it now kind of like I feel like I was just spinning. Like I couldn't see anything, couldn't grab onto anything. Everything was just a whirl. And it was horrible, horrible living like that. My marriage was in trouble. To say it was falling apart doesn't really, that's almost too gentle. It felt like it was exploding, like blowing up. And that's all I knew how to do with life, that it was at the point where if I didn't learn another way, that's all I was going to do was blow it all up. And I was at the point where I was almost looking forward to that, kind of like Jen said, it's the broken thinking of thinking, God, like, I'll just do anything to escape this. And that's where I was. So I went to the meeting, and let me find my notes here. Yeah, and it was really, really an intense experience, but I knew I wanted to come back, and I wasn't really sure why at the time, but I knew I had to go back. And I think now looking back, it was, on some level, I knew I wanted to be able to do what the other people were doing in the meeting. I couldn't believe the honesty that people were sharing and how calm they were sharing it. Just talking to other people, other strangers, letting them know what was going on in their life and who they were. And I'd never seen that before. And I wanted it. I wanted to be able to talk like that without freaking out and crying and falling apart. And so I just kept going. And that was something that I latched onto a lot, because that's kind of what I heard at the beginning. Just keep coming back. So that's what I did. I just kept coming back. And slowly it started to filter into my life and started to change my life. And I'm very, very, very thankful for that. My parents drank. I don't know if they were alcoholics. I still don't know if they are. I don't really worry about that anymore. They drink and there's dysfunction. Both their grandparents were alcoholics, and it definitely left a mark on their families. There was a mental health issues in my family, and with just the dysfunction that my parents didn't have the right tools that they hadn't learned from their families, I grew up feeling very unsafe, lots of chaos, lots of anger, lots of blame, lots of fear. And that's what I grew up in. But I never really realized it at the time. Like, anytime I thought maybe this isn't quite so right, or I try to talk to somebody about it, I didn't really have people in my life at that time that, you know, had any perspective or that could help me. And I couldn't talk to anyone in my family. If I did, I was often met with, you know, it's not that big of a deal, like, get over it, you're being oversensitive, that's life, kind of thing. And that was really the message that I got over and over again, was that my feelings were wrong and inaccurate, and that I had to change them because that wasn't the reality of what was going on. And it left me very confused and making very panicky decisions in my life, where I didn't know what I was basing things on. I was just kind of out there going along trying to figure it out. And much to my dismay, I started to learn that I was getting worse at it as I was getting older. It really pissed me off a lot. I had done some therapy and counseling and different programs. I wanted to learn why I had all these problems. Why did I have all these problems when my family was pretty all right? So I was always trying to investigate that stuff. And I thought I'd done a lot of work and had figured out a lot of things. And then, you know, I was in my 30s and life was not going very well. And my marriage wasn't going well. And I didn't feel good about myself. And I was really mad about that. I couldn't understand why it was getting worse instead of getting better. I didn't really know how to communicate with people or understand my emotions. Again, getting worse. Like, I feel like I had a better handle on things when I was 18 than I did when I was 30. I couldn't identify things. I didn't know how to communicate. I didn't know how to set any kind of boundaries. That's been a very big gift of the program, to understand that. And it was just causing my life to become one that I, you know, really didn't want, didn't enjoy living, and didn't know what to do about. So, oh, lost my place here. Under kind of the theme of the weekend, I guess, awareness, acceptance, action, I was thinking about one of the many experiences that I've had to change and learn in the Al-Anon program. And it brought me back to where I was not all that long ago, maybe under a year for sure. I was very depressed. And I'd been in Al-Anon for a while, and I definitely had gotten a lot of worth out of the program, and things were better, but they also, you know, life was still happening. And at that point, I was severely depressed. I had no idea what to do with my life. I really just wanted to quit everything, and I couldn't understand how it was ever going to change. And I went to a meeting, and the way that I described it has kind of stuck with me, that was really how I felt. I kind of saw life as like this big, slopey, muddy hill, and I'd been trying to climb it my whole life. And when I was younger, I'd get to the top and I'd hang out there for a little bit, but then I'd slide back down and then I'd climb up again. And every time my visits to the top were getting shorter and shorter. And then I wasn't getting to the top and I was getting more covered and weighed down with mud. And it was just this image of myself trying to climb up and slide and just never getting anywhere, to the point where that day I honestly felt I was so removed from being able to live my life. I felt like I was just locked down in the bottom, in the mud. And again, I couldn't understand. I'd been climbing this hill my whole life. Why was I getting worse at it instead of getting better? And now I couldn't even bother to try to climb it. And it was very, very painful. So after a different meeting, magical things happen in Al-Anon, a woman came up and talked to me. I don't remember what I'd shared. I'd said something. And she came up and said, you know, you're really just in it. Like, I can tell you're really, but you gotta stop trying to control. And I didn't really understand. I was kind of irritated. I'm like, no, I know. I know I can't control, like, alcohol and I'm powerless. Like, I get that part, you know. She said, no, like, you're still trying to control the effects of alcoholism. And I disagreed. I was like, no, I'm not. But, like, how do I not try to help myself? Like, I can't go on living like this. I have to do something about it. So, you know, like, that's not very helpful to tell me to not try. but it stuck with me for some reason. And I couldn't get it out of my head. And even though I didn't really know what it meant, it was kind of just coming up over and over. And so just out of the blue one day, I decided, all right, I'm going to stop trying to fix myself. I'm not going to try to not be depressed. I'm not going to do all the things that I think I need to be doing. I'm just going to see what happens. And it was kind of different. It didn't feel like I was giving up. It just felt like I was letting go. And it ended up being a really, you know, fine line in the difference, but the effect was really profound and different for me. I was a real treat to be around. I had stopped trying to look after myself completely. And so I was probably really stinky and gross and not very engaged in my life. But out of all of that, something kind of magical, I always think of it as magical, happened to me. That in that letting go, instead of being so focused on what was wrong with me and what I had to change, I just got this tiny little glimpse of accepting myself how I was. And I'd never felt that before, especially in a state like that. How could I accept myself when I was this broken person who wasn't even living her life? But I got a little shimmer of that, and it's drastically changed my life. And I'm so thankful for it. Once I basically turned over how I wanted my recovery to go, I started there to recover. I didn't realize I'd been listening to a broken record for a really long time about how terrible I was, how I needed to fix myself, that basically just I was wrong, I was flawed, I was not a good person. I hated so many things about myself, and to the point where I basically was just hating myself as I was. And to be able to let go of that, it almost stopped quite quickly. You know, go figure, it was really appealing to not hate myself. So I really latched onto that. And life started to change quite quickly. I still had lots of low moments, but I didn't fight against them. I started to accept that, I guess, that was me and that was part of my life. And I would just keep living, and eventually it would change and I would come into something else. And I did. Lost my thought there. It was very, very freeing. I think when I look back, my entire life, I thought something was wrong with me. If I have to put it under one banner, that's what it was, that something was wrong with me. I'd been told so directly many times in my life, and I got that message everywhere. Everywhere I saw that I was a failure, that things were wrong, and that something was wrong with me. And to have that moment to think maybe that isn't true was very, very profound. And from there, it shifted that thinking oh so subtly to allow the program and my higher power to really come into my life and change all kinds of other things for me as well. Basically, now I pause. I have a relationship with my higher power that I never thought was possible. Even just saying the word higher power, when I first came to the meetings and it ended with a prayer and holding hands, I was like, oh my God, this is, what is this? You know, and now I love it. To me, I don't focus very much on the words of the Lord's Prayer. They kind of had negative connotations for me in the religious background that I grew up in. But there's something to me now that I still enjoy saying it because I love just to hear the unity of everyone's voices. That to me really means something, to know that we're all there together saying those words, reaching out to our higher power, and that in itself has a really profound feeling for me. And it's led me to this relationship with a higher power that that I love. It's really weird and imperfect, and I don't really know how to do it. We were just talking today, sometimes I worry, like, oh, I'm not being strict enough with my routine. I'm not praying in the morning, praying at the night, and meditating when I get home from work, and I gotta, you know, get my set prayers so I say the right things. And then I also just have to keep my awareness and keep working with my higher power. And I worry about that all the time, and then I kind of get a little, like, tap on the shoulder or the back of the head that really doesn't matter, that I am reaching out all that time. And maybe I get to accept that I'm not a very, I'm a pretty sporadic person. I don't do too many things consistently. I do a lot and I go back and forth, but I don't just stick with one thing very well. And I always saw that as a huge failure, a huge flaw in me, and something that was always going to hinder my life. And now I'm starting to accept that actually it could be a benefit, and that it applies to my relationship with my higher power, that that it's okay with that, with him, he, her, I don't know, I'm still working on that one, but I can do it however I live my life, and as long as it's true in my heart what I'm reaching out for, it's going to be there. Al-Anon really has just given me so much that I don't even really know where to begin talking about it. My marriage is wonderful. I'm probably the happiest I've ever been in my entire life that I recall. I've started to actually like myself, and it's almost just the other week I was sitting at work and I was like, I'm uncomfortable. Something's up. I feel uncomfortable. And I realized it was the absence of being miserable. But I thought, oh my God, I haven't been miserable for so long that, like, my body is actually like, come on, let's get tense. Like, I don't really know what to do here. Like, get mad about something, cry. And it was almost, I was like, maybe I do just need to, I'm like, no, relax, it'll be okay, you can do this, you can be happy. And I had to give myself a little pep talk there that it was okay. And I never imagined that was possible, even when I started coming to Al-Anon. I never thought this change, I never thought to do this, to stand up in front of everybody and talk about myself and my life, that I don't even know what I would have rather have done, but it wouldn't have been very productive. And that's how I was living my life before. Letting go of expectations and trusting in my higher power has been so freeing. You know, we all have our hopes and dreams and wants, and I was very focused on that. Hope was my life raft when I was a kid. I daydreamed about everything, about one day how this would happen. One day my life would be this. One day I'd be free of all these problems in my family. And I wanted that life to come true so badly. And it wasn't. And now I'm the most content I've ever been in a life that I had never envisioned when I was young. And it's a simple life, and I love it. And I'm excited to see what still will happen throughout the years. My dad used to say something, he still says it, whenever we would complain or say we wanted something or like, I wish I just had this, or why doesn't this happen? Or now even as adults, when we, you know, start to complain, my dad says, well, wish in one hand and shit in the other and see which one fills up first. And that stuck with me. And I never really thought of it as like Al-Anon program. I don't know if they'll make it on the wall, but I think it it applies. I use it quite regularly now. I remember, yeah, that's basically what I'm doing when I'm focusing on wanting something, trying to control this drive and not letting my life just be. I might as well just shit in my hand. So I'm very, very thankful for the gifts that Al-Anon has given me and the new life that I'm exploring and trying to live the best that I can and the relationships that I now have in my life. So thank you so much for asking me to speak, and have a really great day, everyone.